Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Some strange things have been happening to Canada's justice system under the current federal government. We're building more prisons than ever before, even as we cut spending on rehabilitation of prisoners. Crime rates have reached new lows, but we're imprisoning more people and keeping them there longer. What does this mean? What is happening, and will it accomplish what the government is trying to do? How does Canada compare to our neighbor to the south? A new CBC documentary called State of Incarceration looks at these issues and speaks to experts on both sides of the argument. It's directed by Canadian filmmaker Andrew Gregg. I spoke with him 2 years ago by telephone about another fascinating documentary called The Norse, an Arctic mystery. And I'm very pleased to have him back on the show in person this time to tell us more about the changes to the Canadian justice system and his eye-opening documentary, State of Incarceration. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Good. So why are more Canadians ending up in prison?
I think it's a difficult question to tackle. When we first looked at this documentary, we had seen an article in The Economist last year that said crime rates are down significantly across the Western world. Here are some possible reasons why. Nobody really knows. It's everything from a sort of outlier reasons, like there's less lead in paint, to it's harder to steal cars, to that cohort of baby boomers that of the age that is the age that is generally assumed to be committing crimes from 18 to 45 or whatever. They've all gotten older. There's all these different reasons.
So this is crime going down.
Crime going down. So we looked at that. And I realized that that story wasn't going to get us very far. But then I started looking at the Canadian justice system, and you know, it's been controversial since the Conservatives brought in their new tough on crime legislation. People have been pushing back. The Supreme Courts particularly have been pushing back, and thought, well, wait a minute now. If crime rates are at a 40-year low, why are we building all these new prison cells, as you mentioned, and why are we setting up the laws so that it's easier to get into prison and harder to get out? And so what we started to do was look at our neighbors to the south. America is the most incarcerative nation in the world.
25% of all prisoners are in the U.S.
Yes, it's unbelievable. And I think it's less than 5% of the world population. So, and there's some astronomical number, and I can't take it off the top of my head, but in terms of people, Americans, that are affected by prisons. In other words, dad's there, brother's there, uncle's there, boyfriend's there, girlfriend's there.
Work there.
Work there. It's unbelievable the number of Americans that have that familiarity with prisons.
It's a huge industry.
It's a huge industry, and we don't have that in Canada. But the government is importing these policies, laws, and ideas from the states, while at the same time, Americans, by and large, are saying these ideas actually are a bad idea. They don't work.
Well, some people call the U.S. a prison state with the large number of prisoners, as you're just saying. But under U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, there's been a shift away from mass incarceration. So you interviewed Minister of Justice Peter MacKay for your film. So what is the Canadian government's stand on this issue? What is meant by the tough on crime policies?
I think what they want to do is they want to say, listen, you know, there's still a lot of crime out there, and we're the guys that are going to protect you. And here's how we're going to protect you. We're going to bring in mandatory minimum sentences. So in other words, if you're arrested with a significant amount of pot now, mandatory minimum, year in prison. And what that means is that a judge has no control anymore on what your sentence is going to be. His hands are tied, and their hands are tied. They're going to have to say, okay, I got no power here. I know you're probably a good kid. You got caught with a bag of weed, but we got to send you to jail for a year. Once you start piling up those mandatory minimum sentences, you're going to end up with a lot more people going directly to jail. And that's the experience that we went and filmed in California, where they got in trouble with a certain kind of mandatory minimum sentence called the three strikes law.
I understand under the Canadian legislation, they tried to introduce a three strikes law.
They did. They did, and it failed. They were still a minority government. Three strikes laws have been used in other states in the United States. But the problem with the three strikes law...
Well, could you first explain what the three strikes law means?
Yeah, like what's happened in California is that in the 90s, when crime was at a much higher level, all sorts of petty crimes kept happening and happening and happening. So they said, okay, how are we going to stop this? Are we going to tolerate this, or are we going to do something about it? We're sick and tired of corner stores getting knocked over, you know, house burglaries, this sort of thing. So the three strikes law was, if you've got two charges against you, your third one gets you an automatic mandatory minimum life in prison.
So that even includes stealing a slice of pizza.
Slice of pizza. We've got guys we interviewed at San Quentin Prison, penitentiary, sorry, that baby clothes. One guy took $20 out of a till at a liquor store when the attendant's back was turned.
So life.
That guy got 55 years to life.
It's mind-boggling.
Well, what happens is that what happened in California is the prisons got filled up to 200% of their capacity. So you've got people sleeping in gyms, you've got people sleeping in hallways. And on top of that, every one of those prisoners has a price tag attached to him or her. So that's all sorts of money that's being spent on keeping that person incarcerated, money that could be going to other programs like education or health. So California almost went bankrupt with this. And what happened was that a citizens group based out of Stanford University, the Three Strikes Program, put it to a plebiscite in a California state election, and Californians overwhelmingly voted to get rid of Three Strikes. So now they're releasing, I don't remember the number, I think it's something like 100 Three Strikers a month are getting out of prison.
So the former life sentences are being...
Yeah, there's all sorts of different qualifications. Like some people's third strikes for murder.
Right.
You know, they're not going anywhere. But there, as we saw at San Quentin, there's lots and lots of people who are in there for ridiculously small crimes. And they might be better served if they went to drug counseling, alcohol counseling, whatever. Something would be a lot cheaper and probably more effective.
So in Canada, maybe different from the U.S. with its mandatory life sentences, but in Canada, if you're in prison, eventually you're going to be out of prison.
Yes.
So no matter what happens, you're going to be released. So the big issue is recidivism. Mm-hmm. That's criminals committing crimes again after being released. So could you talk about how the current policies in Canada affect recidivism?
What's happening inside is that as the prison populations are about to expand, they're slowly expanding. We're not talking about a rush on prisons yet. It's something that's happening slowly. And as they're building more prison cells, they're going to look for people, presumably, to fill those cells.
Thousands more prison cells.
2,700 new cells, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's the largest prison expansion in Canadian history since the 1930s.
And yet crime rates are at
almost an all-time low.
Yeah.
And as you'll see in the doc, you've seen, but as the viewers will see in the doc, the justice minister says on camera, oh, there's this myth that we're creating this massive prison expansion.
Is what Peter McKay said.
Yeah, it's not a myth. It's Howard Sapers, a Correctional Services of Canada investigator, like a government appointee, nonpartisan, says that the amount of prison cells they're building now in Canada is equal to five new medium security prisons. So they're adding them on to existing prisons. They're not building new prisons. And so that's very important. There's not a new prison going up somewhere. They're going in, and this leads back to your original question. They're going into existing prisons and expanding them, but they're not expanding the programs, and they're not expanding the staffing. They're not expanding the healthcare. So any education or rehabilitative programs that might have been available, which they've already been cut back, anything that might still be available, there's going to be way more people that are trying to get at them. So we feature a lifer who's at the Fenbrook Institution in Gravenhurst, a guy named Greg McMaster. He's a quadruple murderer, and he's been in for 37 years.
An American.
Yep. But three of the murders he committed over a six-day spree in 1978 were done in Canada. So, you know, he's a bad guy. But he's been inside for so long. He's such an interesting perspective. It's like I said to somebody trying to justify interviewing this guy, I said, it's like doing a story on hockey without any talking to any hockey players.
Right.
You know, we got to talk to somebody on the inside.
For sure.
And this guy, if there's a prisoners committee, he's in charge of it.
And he's a very good observer of what's unbelievable. Been, of the changes
he's also on. A brilliant writer. He's a very, very, very good writer. And what he's noticing is that these young guys are coming into prison. Programs aren't available to them. They're just sitting around all day and they're seething. And it is, as he points out, and as Howard Sapers points out, it is a correctional service. You're supposed to be preparing them to get released. And that's not happening now.
And if they're not being prepared for release, they're going to get in trouble again.
The rate of recidivism goes up. We went to a program in Texas called the Prisoners Entrepreneurship Program. And it is a program privately run, but within the Texas prison. It's in one prison, but they're going to look to expand to other prisons. It's been very successful. And what they do is they take in prisoners who are within 3 years of release and have been on good behavior. And they put them through a five-month intensive college-level business course. Once those guys get out, their employment rate within 30 days of release is 100%, and their rate of recidivism is down around 5%. Where the state of Texas, the rate of recidivism is 60%. So you can see how effective it is to give these guys something to use once they get out.
So why are those programs being cut, have been cut in Canada, such as the prison
Lifeline.
Farms?
Lifeline cut out of Windsor. Your guess is as good as mine. I know.
Because it's not a matter of expenses, since they're spending more on prisons than ever before.
It's cheaper.
Yeah.
This is the thing. This is why they're doing it. And the guys that are doing it in Texas, they're not left-wing, bleeding-heart liberals. These guys are hardcore right-wingers. Republicans, Tea Party Republicans. Matter of fact, there's a group out of a think tank in Austin, Texas called Right on Crime. And they advocate shutting prisons down in order to spend the money more wisely on rehabilitative programs. And they're very aware of what's going on in Canada. And when you talk to them about it, you know, as I say, the conservative bedmates of our own government, when you talk to them about it, they say, what's going on in Canada? Can't you see that we've already been down this road? It didn't work. And yet you're doing the same thing.
So I'd like to go to a slightly different issue, but the prison system disproportionately affects the Aboriginal population in Canada, roughly 10 times the incarceration rate of the rest of Canada compared to other Canadians. And your film deals with the last 10 years, and since 2001, federal Aboriginal inmate population has increased by 56%. That's an incredible increase from 17% then to 23% of the total population, prison population. So could you talk about how First Nations are bearing the brunt of these changes to the justice system?
We didn't do a lot for the research of this doc and the production of this doc on Aboriginal incarceration because it's a subject all on its own.
That's true.
And it's something that I'd like to delve into further. So I don't know a lot about it. That being said, it's never stopped me from talking before. That being said, it is almost reflective of the numbers of African American prisoners, the disproportionate number of African Americans in prison in the United States. There are a number of activists that I did run across down there, people that are ex-cons, that were some of them wrongfully convicted and had their sentences overturned after 10 years. One guy I talked to in New York, for the 10 years that he was away, he was in solitary for six. It's a guy that he didn't do anything, you know. There's a predisposition in the criminal justice system in the States that if you're a black guy, the chances are you're going to get nabbed for something. Thus, the stop and frisk program in New York City, yeah, which has been proven to be unconstitutional. But when you look at who was stopped, it was so disproportionately black and Puerto Rican that it had to be ruled unconstitutional.
And so in Canada, if we're talking 41% of women in prison are Native, when we're talking about prisoners, for a large part, we're talking about how it's affecting Natives in Canada.
And if I'm not mistaken on the numbers, and I could be wrong here, so I should, but a lot of those crimes are drug related. And so if you look at the American experience, do we spend, I think the average cost, and once again, don't quote me, but the average cost to keep a woman in prison in Canada for 1 year is something like $180,000.
Wow.
Per woman. It might even be higher. Somebody was probably going to phone in and tell me I'm wrong, and it's probably higher. And if it is higher, then that further makes the point. Couldn't that money be better spent in rehabilitation programs? Couldn't that money be better spent in a job placement program? Couldn't it be better spent and going on to reserve or within the Native communities and urban settings and helping develop those places? Stockpiling people in prison, I think that's kind of the overall lesson, doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
And finally, what do you predict for Canada if the current policies continue?
I think you're going to see a continued battle between the Prime Minister's office and the Supreme Court. They've already rejected five or six provisions of the tough on crime laws. And I think you're just going to see that happen over and over again because the judges don't want their power taken away.
Thanks for talking with me, Andrew.
No problem, Daniel. Thank you.
I've been speaking with director Andrew Gregg about his informative and important new documentary, State of Incarceration. You can watch it on CBC TV's Doc Zone Thursday, October 9th at 9 p.m. Go to cbc.ca/DocZone for more information. This is Daniel Garber, the movies for CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.